When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Wonder working power in the precious.
Incredible as they seem, are not the results of mass hysteria.
You may wish to adjust the dial you're currently tuned into.
The wrong station.
Spring wind on the damp sand, with heavy clouds out at sea sending their first shards of rain toward the shore. Two horses churning up the strand, two riders' heavy raiment flowing out behind them as they raced against the weather. The lead rider was a not quite young man, richly dressed in patterned wools of red and gold and green. A gilt harp was slung between the crook of his arm and hip, and his eye held a bird-like gleam. Slightly behind him rode a monumental ruin of a man, half slumped and huddled in the saddle, so heavy, despite great age, that even his huge mount found him a burden. This rider carried no instrument, but only a two-handed sword slung wide across the miles of his shoulder. His clothes, once fine, were now all dinge and stain. No shining chestnut hair hung from his brow, only shaggy, leaden curls. If you could hear, over the wind and surf, the pound of hoofs and cry of seabird pups along the cliffs, you might have heard him humming something, a dim, meandering, off-key tune. Slow. The lead rider pulled his reins, flinging out an arm to stay his half-aware companion as they came around the headland. Both horses slowed, and the younger man laughed as a fresh wind came upon them, and those distant clouds reddened the sinking sun. A great mountain of tumbled stone sloped into the sea before them. Black ravens spiraled the thermals of its heavy slopes. Where sea and mountain met, a half-drowned cave gasped amid the stiffening surf.
"There it is," the youngish man announced. "The cave of Grizzlith Arch. We have arrived."
His companion only mumbled aimlessly beneath his breath.
"What?" sneered the younger man. "No song of praise? No ancient words to venerate our goals achieve?"
His only answer was that toothless song. Now sunset grew purplish with the coming rain, a taste of petrichor upon the air, a hint of thunder on the wind.
The horses were splashing ankle-deep at the entrance of the cave when a voice swirled up from the darkness.
"Hold!"
As if the water itself had spoken. Further in, where that water stagnated under darkness, something like a low fountain began to boil up from the scungy surface. First, it humped itself up into a vague silhouette, and then lurched and reached itself into a mockery of human form.
"You must turn back."
Its words were vomit. Its waters collapsed all the time under their own weight, boiling back up again in stink and flecks of floating rot.
"This cave is hers. She allows no man to enter."
The younger bard unslung his harp, fingers quickly plucked upon small strings, and the cave waters began to retreat, pulling the liquid form back as quickly as it came on.
"We know who this cave belongs to." The youngish man shot his chin. "We've come to reclaim that treasure she stole so long ago."
Now the waters of that churning form redoubled themselves to flow forward, advancing into the last beams of sunlight. The shadow of something solid showed through them.
"Who are you?"
"I am Talon of the Bards."
"I do not know that name."
"You shall."
Fingers sped upon the harp, and once more the waters withdrew. Now the stagnant form prowled from side to side in darkness at the music's edge, like a man creeping on his belly in the murk. Talarn let his fingers slow, allowed a thin smile to appear at the edges of his mouth.
"And what of him?"
asked the shape of rancid water.
"Who is your silent friend?"
"Him?"
Talarn barely spared a glance.
"He is the Songmaster."
The creature stopped, hunching like a threatened dog.
"That name I do know."
It tilted what passed for its head.
"Yet this is not the man I remember."
A wave began to swell in the darkness behind it.
"He is much reduced, but I am strong enough for us both," said Talarn. "Now let us pass, or I will play a song to freeze you solid for a dozen summers."
But no sooner had he spoken than the wave unleashed itself, suddenly bloating the form of rancid water so that it swole to twice a man's size and fell upon Talarn, howling. Fingers too slow upon the strings, he was smashed from the saddle with all the air driven from his lungs, and through the water a pair of bony hands laced themselves around his neck. Panic set in as Talarn inhaled foul water. He clawed fruitlessly at the grip around his throat, and then, as darkness swirled in around him, the bony fingers were torn away. Talarn pushed to the surface, coughing and sobbing as he spat up water that tasted like death. There came a grisly thump, and then another. Then, silence. It was the Songmaster. One arm drenched to the shoulder, he was carrying that thing he'd ripped from Talarn's throat, a drowned half-skeleton ending at the spine, its bones long and glistening and brown. He had the skull clutched in one huge hand, as if it was nothing bigger than a turnip. As Talarn retched and coughed himself to his feet, the Songmaster raised that brown globe to his own ear.
"Turn back, turn back."
Removed from their rancid water, the bones spoke only in dim echoes. The Songmaster frowned, and then slammed that skull back against the wall of the cave three more times. Whump, whump, crunch. Splash. He tossed the broken remnants away.
"It hath,"
Talarn admitted after a moment,
"a certain music to it."
5 weeks earlier, inside the crowded hall at Clarsha Dun, Talarn had quieted the assembly. A new brooch of office had shone brightly upon his chest, and he had taken a new chair, higher than any other save the Songmaster's itself.
friends, brothers, he'd assured them. We need not yet abandon hope. There is one weapon we can use, if only we've the courage to reach and take it.
His voice had been met with mingled cheers and shouts of scorn. Everybody knew which weapon he meant. Most had made up their minds already. That weapon remains beyond our power, Telarn. Nurin's voice came in low and clear from the other end of the dais. She was looking old, to Talarn's eye. As it should remain.
I say it is not. One among us has been to the cave of Grislith Arch, our very own Songmaster.
He raised one arm toward their leader's graying bulk. A ragged cheer nearly raised the ancient's drooling chin from his chest. The harp of Avel means death to those who hear it. Nurin could barely be heard over the crowd. Can we trust you with that power?
Not I. Never.
Talarn lied.
But in time of war we must look to ourselves. Who hath the wisdom to use this thing, if not we, the bards? And if this house votes to use the harp, then who shall deny them?
Hear, hear!
Shouted Talarn's faction in the crowd.
A harp! A songmaster! A songmaster!
And Nurin returned silent to her chair, finding herself outvoted. As they chanted the songmaster's name, that old man looked up in confusion on his throne. His eyes were bleary. A tuneless mumble trembled on his cracking lips.
This way, songmaster! Talarn shouted, wading deeper into the muck. Quickly, before the storm comes!
Already his fingers were back on the harp strings, playing up a tongue of fire to dance the darkness with him into night. Behind, the songmaster dismounted with a grunt and creak, then heavy strides sloshing, and that vague, persistent hum suddenly loud in the dark, always on the verge of resolving into tune. A low thunder echoed the sea behind them.
This way, my lord, quickly now.
Nurin.
No. Talarn, my lord. Talarn, your loyal hand.
The floor sank and water rose as they splashed deeper, from calves to knees to hips and lower ribs. Though he was ancient and accustomed to blankets and braziers on his throne, the songmaster seemed not to notice how cold the water had become. Perhaps his great body still remembered hardship. From time to time, he'd stop in the darkness to shut his eyes and shake his mighty head. In these moments, he almost stopped humming. Now the water stood at Talarn's armpits, the songmaster's ribs, and the only way forward was a drowned stairwell leading down into black water. The songmaster gave an anxious grunt, but Talarn sneered.
Nothing to worry about, my lord. It's the sort of thing a bard can handle.
And though the songmaster was head of the Order of the Bards, so many were the sword burns and humps of mace-starred scar on his skull that he didn't seem to notice he'd been insulted. Now Talarn's fingers raised a new and haunting tune. For a moment, the floating tongue of fire dimmed, and then the waters of the tunnel whispered themselves back out of the way. A reeking stairwell wound down to total blackness. Pale things scuttled back, or drowned in the air upon the slime.
This way, songmaster, Talarn called,
and led them down below the waterline. Deep had been the crowd as Talarn and the songmaster set out upon their quest, but of Nurin's faction, only the old woman herself showed up, following on foot to gently call after Talarn as they left the gates of Clashadun behind.
What is it, Nurin?
The younger man deigned to slow, as the songmaster's mighty silver horse swayed on ahead. I wanted to ask you something before you go.
Then be quick about it.
She stepped close to the stirrup and looked up at him. Why do you hate him so much? She meant the songmaster, of course. Talarn glanced back at the gate,
and judging himself far enough that no keen ear would hear him, he bent close to her and hissed the truth.
Because he is an embarrassment. What lore does he know? What songs can he sing? Only that one mindless tune of his. Why should he lead us?
He'd expected this outburst to scandalize her. But Nurin only looked sad. Talarn's stomach turned. He hadn't expected pity. There is knowledge of the kind you find in books, Talarn. And then there is the other kind. He snorted.
What deepity! Such profunditude! Did you chase me down for this, Nurin, to bore me with mystic nonsense?
We are bards, Talarn. She was patient. We know how to sing, how to play. We come to truth through how, not what.
And what, pray, does that old wreck know how to do?
She said simply, he is an artist. Halfway down the stairs, Talarn stood aside and let the songmaster pass. The old man rolled down into darkness without waiting for Talarn's little flame, and the smell of him was strong and sour as he passed. The chime should last for about an hour, songmaster, Talarn whispered after him. After that, the waves will flow back in. But the old man gave no answer. Not because he was lost, as ever, in scraps of disconnected tune, but because he had raised slumped shoulders to stand rigid at the bottom of the steps. As Talarn came up behind, the songmaster glanced back, and his eyes reflected like great chips of crystal in the dark. One huge hand reached for the scabbard at his shoulder. Talarn's mouth formed the beginning of a what, but before he could shape his question, something rustled in the dark. A chitin click, a scrape of claws upon the rough-hewn floor. He felt his blood leave him. His fingers were cold as they reached for his harp. Something faded slowly from the blackness into gloom. Pallid crustacean plates reflected dimly in the flicker of his little light. Man-shaped, but faceless, eyeless, its head extruding worm-like into a jawless sphincter ringed by sharpened plates, its arms hung slack, and it staggered without water to support its weight. Suddenly, this thing lurched toward them with a sucking sound, and others boiled forward from the night behind, and Talarn's hands clenched up at the strings as he fell backward to the steps. Then came a low hum. Its sound made the bones buzz at the base of his skull, and it came from the songmaster's chest. Suddenly the years had fallen from that old man like leaves from an autumn oak. His great head was held upright, and the heavy sword was in his gnarled hands. The tune which buzzed from his throat was unlike any human sound, and it was painful to hear. It veered from discord to dissonance, offending all aesthetic sense, and yet some lively quality to the noise seemed to wake the songmaster with every bar, reminding him of the next one, and the more he remembered of himself, the more he remembered the tune. In front of Talarn, he seemed to grow wider than any human being had ever been, and then suddenly he was falling forward and lurching time with the tune, and the heavy sword with all his huge weight behind it plowed through plate and scale and flesh and all that reached toward him. Now more and more of the plated creatures boiled out of darkness, but the tune grew louder and threatened to resolve, and with each change in pitch the mighty body veered, and the plunging weapon made its wet percussion through the pinkish fluids of their bodies. One of the things slipped past that hewing blade and descended on Talarn, who screamed and kicked it off and fumbled for a knife at his belt, and barely managed to wedge its point between nested plates and push deep. Fleshy whiskers surged from the sphincter mouth to probe his eyes and nose and ears while the creature sputtered and died upon him. But all the while the songmaster sang, or hummed, or made whatever noise he made, and all the while his weapon crunched and split and sawed until he stood thigh-deep in the wreckage of the pallid things, still hewing as he sang their wreckage into mush beneath his hands. And when the percussion ended, so too did the song. The old man breathed heavy in the darkness, covered all in thicknesses of hemolymph. Talarn whimpered and kicked away the still-twitching body of the thing he'd killed. He stared in terror as the Songmaster turned blazing eyes to stare at him from the ruined face. It was like looking into a storm. Then the music's final echoes were sopped up by the softness of the slaughtered things, and those blazing eyes bleared up, and the great frame shrank. And once more the Songmaster was only the ruin of a man. Talarn stared a while in silence. Then he muttered that same thing which Nurin had once told him. He is an artist. Once, when she was young, Nurin had spent 3 days outside the cave of Grislatharge, in the rain, waiting for dead men to emerge. On the morning of the 4th day, just as she was packing the last of her camp, a red figure crawled like a great newborn from the grimy surf of the cave entrance. An immense man, his hair a mop of dark curls, his hands like blocks of masonry. Seagulls had already descended on him by the time she drew close. They were aggressive toward her, but she played them to sea with a song of the west wind on her ocarina. She had been quite certain he was dead, but as she knelt by the body, she was surprised to find a pulse still strong in his neck. At the touch of her cool fingertips, he suddenly shook and clawed the sand and pushed himself up onto one arm, staring at her with wild eyes as a song poured inhuman from his lips and the stones began to bleed. She'd done the one thing she could think of in the moment, struck him in the side of the head with a rock, knocking him out cold. It had been difficult to wrestle him onto horseback after that, but she'd still been strong in those days. When next he came to, they were on the road home to Clarsha Dun. That day, she became the first to call him Songmaster. Now, in the inmost depths of Grislatharge, it was the Songmaster who led, and Talarn who scrambled to the rocks behind, trying to keep up. What was that song? His own voice sounded thin and piping to him after the Songmaster's growl, but the old man gave no answer. His moment of clarity had passed, it seemed, and now he was borne deeper into the mountain by instinct or memory, as if drawn by the sound of a song that only he could hear. Could you teach that song to me, Songmaster? He received no response. Now they began to climb a winding spiral of wet rocks, and when Talarn judged they'd risen high enough, he released his song on the curling waters of the outer cave, letting them flow back down and wash away the broken bodies of the plated things. He felt his mind lighten without the burden of that spell, but when he tried to piece together that melody the Songmaster had howled, he couldn't make it come together in his thoughts. Where did you learn that tune, Songmaster? The tunnel now widened ahead, out onto a promontory above some open space where a reddish glow stained the rocks. The Songmaster lengthened his stride, as if his unheard music had quickened, and great thighs flung him from step to step while Talarn struggled behind. At last the Songmaster hesitated on that precipice, framed by that red light rising from below. He turned his back toward Talarn, and the red light flowed across his face down chasms of scar. His eyes still unfocused.
Nurin?
No, my lord, it is Talarn, your servant. Talarn.
Talarn.
The Songmaster glanced down again at the source of red light. Then he shuddered and curled away from it, sinking to his knees with a great hand over his face.
No, not here, not again.
Talarn stepped slowly to the brink. Below, a river of thick magma glowed along the cavern wall. You could follow its rising fumes to a gap in the distant ceiling. No stars showed beyond, only a distant flick of lightning. And from these brief flashes, something glimmered in the haze below. A great pile of golden treasure gathered careless in a heap. And amidst those many precious things, a harp of shining silver white. What else could it be but what they had come here for?
Yet Talarn could see why the old man despaired, for at the Magma River's bank a huge creature sat hunched forward at a spit. His hide was dark-furred blubber like a seal's, yet he carried himself like a man, and an armor of linked obsidian plate hung clacking down from chains across his shoulder. The head, too, was flat-eared and seal-like, and yellow teeth were pitted black within his panting jaws. On the spit he had three bodies wretchedly impaled, a sheep's, a seal's, and a man's. As if he could sense himself being watched, this Fomorian glanced up at the promontory above, and Talarn flung himself back from the edge. In the brief glimpse he'd gotten of that creature's face, he had seen one eye pinched and withered shut, the other red and huger than a grown man's fist.
Songmaster, what is that creature?
Gull, said the songmaster through his hands.
Heavy fingers dragged themselves down the old man's face, and for the first time his eyes were clear, not with the terrible brightness of the tunnel fight, but with the simple clarity of a man awakened from his sleep.
Who are you?
He asked.
And why have you brought me here?
Talarn knelt across from him.
Songmaster, we are here for the Harp of Avel. Whatever this gall may be, I have seen what you can do. If we work together, we can...
But the old man only curled himself to the floor.
Songmaster, Talarn insisted. You must have something we can use against him. There must be something, you know.
But the old man only hummed and pounded his forehead against the rock until tears forced themselves between the crags of his eyes. Now Talarn stood, his demeanor growing cold.
Very well. I thought I'd been wrong about you, Songmaster. Saw something in you for a moment. But it was only a moment, and now that moment's past. So be it. I know the 9 charms and 90 songs. I can list the words of might by memory alone. I will seize this harp myself.
Talarn's fingers drifted on the strings, and the charm wove up and over him. He knew every variation of this charm, one for fish and fowl and bird and beast and every other type of living thing. And so he played confidently as he climbed down from the promontory, step by winding step, hidden from the eye and ear of Gull, who sat focused on his pike of slowly browning meat. And with a cold smile on his lips, Talarn stopped within reach of the Fomorian and played, knowing the monster had no idea he was there. And yet, even in absolute safety, he felt a tremble standing in the presence of that giant, his huge, sleek body like the side of a hill, breathing like a forge, his fingers on the roasting spit large as Talarn's forearms. The smell of him, like sea and like the musk of a dog's glands, was overpowering, overawing. The animal in Talarn longed to flee. The man within him had to force it to heal, to demonstrate superiority by way of this unseen taunt. The Fomorian drew a deep breath.
Your playing is awful.
Then, as Talarn wondered who the giant spoke to, it turned over its shoulder and stared at him with that unpupiled crimson eye.
Oh.
The hand seized and clenched him tight, cracking his ribs before he could even think about what had happened. The harp fell from his fingers, and Gull, chuckling, tossed him away. He landed on the pile of golden treasure, felt his cracked ribs break, and the pain was like a rising sun. He would have screamed, but even to draw the slightest breath hinged his body with fire. Still chuckling, Gull turned back to the Molten River and slowly hefted his roasting spit.
One more for the feast.
But then a buzzing song filled the chamber of the cave, and Gull's eye grew wide, and he cast about him for the source of the noise. But it was all around him.
Songmaster, I thought I saw you hiding up there. Come to take my other eye.
And as he turned back to the river of fire, a figure hung as if suspended above it. The songmaster, soaring in his leap down from the promontory with the song upon his lips, the heavy war sword in his hand.
Try it!
Gaul stabbed out with the spit, as if thrusting a spear up into the throat of some great beast, and the songmaster fell onto the point of it, still singing, his face transformed as the point burst through his belly and he fell down the length of that great wooden shaft. With a mighty heave, he hurled the sword with both hands, and it spun into Gaul's eye, as the songmaster tried to drag himself down the spit with both hands, still singing that awful song, still crystal-eyed, still pulling with both hands even as the spit tumbled from Gaul's grip, and the old man died upon the cavern's floor.
My eye! What have you done to me, songmaster?
Blinded, the giant collapsed to all fours and groped across the cavern floor, streaming blood from the sword hilt buried in his eye. The blood dribbled from his teeth as he moaned and reached.
I'll kill you, songmaster. I'll kill you both.
The bloody face loomed huge over Talarn in the crimson light, as Gaul's huge hands pawed at the pile of gold. Thick blood dribbled from his hound-like teeth to spatter the young bard's face. Then the hand of Gaul by chance seized hold of Talarn's leg, and the young bard groaned in agony as he was lifted in the air.
One more for the feast.
Gaul slurred words through his own blood.
One more for the feast.
He lifted Talarn to his black lips. Then a chord shook the air. Reality shivered. The giant wailed and flung palms over his ears, dropping Talarn, who landed heavy in the pile of gold. The pain of that landing almost whitened his senses, but he somehow kept hold of the harp he'd seized, the silver-white harp of Avel. And now that his fingers had begun to play, it was as if they played at the will of something other than himself. Now two chords, now three, and Talarn realized with dawning horror at the fourth dissonant chord that he knew which tune his fingers played, and he tried to stop them, but his ruined hands would only speed tormented on the strings. Gaul moaned as the blood poured forth between his fingers and fountained out between his teeth. Talarn opened his mouth to howl with pain, but all that waited inside his jaws was the song. That same song, buzzing and tuneless and unlike any human sound, painful to hear, veering from discord to dissonance, offending all aesthetic sense, and yet some lively quality seemed to clarify the sharpness of his pain with every bar, showing him the road of broken glass that led from one note to the next. The song was like burning vomit in his throat, yet the pain it filled him with was not the pain of broken ribs or broken hands or burning bile, but the pain of beauty truly understood, the ecstasy of understanding that sears beyond mere knowledge. And the rocks themselves began to bleed, and the cave itself began to peel itself against the open sky, and Gaul, like a sheet of paper, was ripped in twain. Once, when she was old, Nurin spent a night outside the cave of Grislatharj, in a storm, waiting for dead men to emerge. As the wildness of night gave way to the simple light of a clear morning, a red figure crawled like a great newborn from the grimy surf of the cave entrance. A slight man of no remarkable appearance. Seagulls had already descended by the time she drew close. They were aggressive toward her, but she played them over the land with a song of the east wind on her ocarina. She was quite certain he was dead, but as she knelt by the body, she was surprised to find a faint pulse still stirring in his neck. At the touch of her cool fingertips, he suddenly shook and clawed the sand and pushed himself up onto one arm as the song tried to force itself between his jaws, and he clenched his lips so tight that they began to bleed. She did the only thing she could think of in the moment. She stayed by his side and held him in her arms until tears streamed from his face and the song in his throat died away to winding murmur. It was difficult to wrestle him onto horseback after that. She was old. But he was only a slender person, after all. The pain blacked him out. When next he came to, they were on the road home to Clarshadun. The headland was far to their rear, and the cave of Grislatharge was hidden by its bulk. "You were right, you know," she said, "about him. No names of ancient kings, no songs except the one. He wasn't much of a bard." She sighed and looked out at the clear sea, the white lines rolling down its length. "He was a great artist, though." There was so much Talarn wished to say, but all he could do was close his eyes and clench himself against the pain, clench his jaws against the song. She reached out and rested one cool palm against his face. "You will be too," she told him. "In your time." And then she called him Songmaster. The Wrong Station is made possible with the generous support of our listeners on Patreon. Visit today at patreon.com/thewrongstation. You can also support us by leaving a rating and review on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever it is you tune into the show. This week's episode, Songmaster, was written by Alexander Saxton and performed by Anthony Botello. Thank you to Voice Del Monte, Abby Wilson, Shelby Owens, Hawk, Gray Days, Austin Ruby, and Vibrex for helping us keep the lights, well, off. The Wrong Station is co-produced by Alexander Saxton, Anthony Botello, and Jacob Duarte Spiel, with music composed and performed by Alon Citrin and arranged for the viola and performed by Viola Schmidt. You can follow The Wrong Station on social media, at The Wrong Station, and email us at thewrongstation@gmail.com. And until next time, thank you for listening.